This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Dalbank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
I'm with Dr. Adam Deller from Astron in the Netherlands today. Hello, Dr. Deller.
Hello.
And you've just given a talk about the MJIVE survey. Could you explain to us what that's about, please?
Sure. So that's a very high angular resolution survey in the radio. So surveys in the radio have been carried out for a very long time, starting off in Cambridge and other places. But what it sets it apart from other radio surveys is that it's performed at very high angular resolution using a technique called very long baseline interferometry, or VLBI. And so with VLBI, we make use of telescopes that are thousands of kilometers apart to give us the highest angular resolution imaging that we can do with any technique in astronomy, actually. And so using this, we can look for very compact sources of radio emission.
So what instrument are you using to do this survey? Because, I mean, VLBI involves multiple telescopes, but I think you're using a specific array?
Yeah, exactly. So there's a number of different VLBI arrays in the world, and the one that we're using for the MJIVE 20 project is the Very Long Baseline Array in the US, which is 10 25-meter diameter dishes spread across the continental US, and one in Hawaii and one in St. Croix in the Virgin Islands.
What kind of resolution does that give you?
Resolution is frequency dependent in the radio, because the telescopes are a constant distance apart. But as you go to higher frequency, the wavelength of the radiation you're receiving is getting shorter. At the frequency of this survey at 1.4 gigahertz, our resolution is around about 5 milliarc seconds, so 0.005 of an arc second. To put that in some kind of context, if you were going to image the moon at an angular resolution of 5 milliarc seconds, you would have something like 1 million pixels across the surface of the moon.
So we're looking at very, very precise images in the radio. So what's the point of just doing a survey of compact objects?
Well, people do surveys for lots of reasons, and the prime one is usually just to see what's there. And in this case, that's sort of a valid argument, actually, because no one has really done this before. Surveying with VLBI is very difficult precisely because the resolution is so high. If you wanted to make an image of the whole sky, you would need petabytes and petabytes and petabytes. I can't even comprehend the numbers myself of data. And so it's been computationally and logistically very difficult in the past. And around about 5 years ago, we developed a new technique to let us zoom in and make these high resolution images just around the sources that we're interested in, rather than having to make an image of the whole field at once.
Okay. So how do you pick out the ones that you're interested in the first place?
Okay, so there we make use of an existing radio survey that's been done at lower resolution, and we sort of mark out all of the sources, and then when we observe a field, we produce little mini cutouts, little pencil beams around each of the sources that we're interested in, and we ignore all the empty space in between. And actually, it's also useful anyway, because typically we want to compare what's going on the very small scales, what we see with these high angular resolution observations, with what we see at the large scales, with the lower angular resolution observations anyway. So you want them both.
So the types of objects that you're primarily interested in when you're looking at this sort of resolution are AGNs, active galactic nuclei. Could you tell us maybe a bit more about those?
Yeah, so with this high angular resolution, you're looking at a small region, obviously, a very small bit of space. Mm-hmm. And in order to see something from a sort of cosmological distance, it must be pretty bright coming out of that such a small region. And once you get out to a sort of cosmological distance, a reasonable distance away from our galaxy, the only thing capable of generating in a sustained fashion that kind of energy is an active galactic nuclei, which is being powered by accretion onto a supermassive black hole.
And what do these things look like? We're talking about just jets, I guess.
Yeah. So in the optical, what you tend to see from an AGN is the accretion disk. So the gas and material that's falling onto the black hole is being accelerated as it's whipping around very close to the black hole. It heats up and it glows. But in the radio, you don't see that so much, because we're not really so sensitive to that thermal radiation. But at the same time, as the black hole's eating this material, it tends to spit some back out as well in the form of highly collimated, very rapidly moving, very relativistic jets. And this plasma in those jets generates radio emission, which we can observe.
So how many sources have you observed so far then?
At this point in time, we've observed something like 20,000 sources from the first survey. The first survey is the one that we're using as our finder catalog. So that has about 1 million sources in it. And so we're getting there, but slowly. We don't really expect to finish the whole thing. And of those 20,000 sources we've looked at, we've detected about 4,000.
Okay, just to clarify for our listeners, first survey isn't just the first in time, it's an acronym.
Sorry, I should have mentioned that. The faint images of the radio sky at 20 centimetres. So it's a survey performed with the Very Large Array in the US.
And how long has MDrive been running to see these 4,000 sources?
About a year and a half now. So we get our time in short blocks, about an hour at a time, when the telescope would otherwise be idle. So it's called filler time, actually. And we've been getting about 3 or 4 hours, maybe 4 or 5 hours a week on the telescope. So it's been building up quite quickly.
Okay, and how much time does it have left?
At this rate, we'll run through our allocation probably by the end of next year. But assuming you know the science is still progressing well and we think that it's worthwhile to extend it, we can apply for more time, more of this unused filler time.
Okay, so what interesting things have you seen in your sample of sources so far?
So what I talked about today and what I think is the most interesting thing that we've seen so far was that in the first survey, our finder catalog, we have objects of different brightness. There are bright ones and there are faint ones. But we think all of them are basically the same kind of source. They're all coming from radio loud AGN. So sure. Ultimately being produced by the jets in these from these supermassive black holes. Mm-hmm. And so we thought at the beginning that we would expect the bright sources to be pretty much the same as the faint ones. So if we looked at a bright source with VLBI at high resolution, we wouldn't see on average different characteristics to faint ones. But that wasn't what we saw. We saw that the faint ones were actually more likely to be compact than the bright ones. And so that set us to a lot of scratching of our heads, and we've come up with a few different explanations of why that might be.
This might sound like a bit of a simple question, but what would differentiate bright and faint sources in the first place if they're coming from the same sort of object?
One thing might be how far away they are. So a more distant source might be fainter. Another thing is simply that the strength of the jet, how much material is being spat out and how fast it's being spat out. Another thing actually is how long the jet has been turned on for, because as this material gets shot out away from the black hole, it plows into the gas in the surrounding galaxy and then eventually in the surrounding intergalactic medium. And the longer that goes on for, the more energy gets pumped in and the more radio emission that we see.
Okay. Is there anything else that you guys have found? You talked about finding some lenses in your talk.
Yeah. So one of the nice things about having a very large sample is that you can start to go through and look for rare objects. And gravitational lenses are rare objects. They occur when you have a large mass in between you, the observer, and a background source. And if the alignment is just right, then you can actually see multiple images of the background source because the light is being deflected by the massive object in between. And they're quite rare. There's not so many known, especially not so many that are radio loud. And they have certain observational properties. They should look a certain way if we look for them in a high angular resolution map. And so we did some automated processing and we found some candidates. And so we're following some of them up now. But before we started doing the follow-up, we actually checked to see if any of them were known lenses. And indeed, two of them already were. So that was both exciting and disappointing. Exciting because it showed that the technique worked, but disappointing because they weren't our lenses, that were someone else's.
Yeah. But you do have hopes of finding your own lenses with the data that you have and that you're going to collect.
Then. Exactly, yeah. We have four very good candidates that we're following up at the moment, and then a few other, maybe more borderline ones as well. And we're getting new data at a different frequency that will help us confirm or deny whether they are lens sources.
Finally, once the survey, the MDrive survey is done, do you think that there's a possibility of applying that sort of technique of zooming in on particular bits of sky to other areas of the sky and comparing them with other source catalogs, other surveys?
So everything that we've been doing so far has been with the VLBA, this network of 10 telescopes in the US. And I mean, that's a fantastic instrument, but it's 10 25 meter dishes. So it's, in terms of collecting area, it's not the most sensitive instrument out there. But there are other facilities coming along, ultimately the Square Kilometer Array, which will be, if built out to its final form, will have comparable resolution, but much, much improved sensitivity. And so we could do this not down to sources of something like a millijansky, which is what we're doing at the moment, but down to the microjansky level, potentially. And that starts to probe a different source population. So at the moment, we're looking at all kind of radio loud active galactic nuclei. And if we can probe down a bit fainter, then we start to get into the regime of radio quiet AGN and also starburst galaxies.
Excellent. So there's a lot of stuff to do in the future then for this project.
There always is.
Great. Thank you very much for talking to us today.
My pleasure.